Cassian more often than I'd hit him. The right punches, those were easy.
"Get a drink," he said. "Then we're working on your core. No point in learning to punch if you can't even hold your stance."
I frowned toward the sound of clashing blades in the open sparring ring across from us. Azrael, surprisingly, had returned from the mortal realm by lunch. Moore had intercepted him first, but I'd gotten a second-hand report from Rhys that he'd found some sort of barrier around the Queen's palace and had needed to return to assess what might be done about it. Assess and brood, it seemed, since Azrael had barely managed a polite hello to me before launching into sparring with Rhysand, his face grim and tight. They'd been at it now for an hour straight, their slender blades like flashes of quicksilver as they moved around and around. I wondered if it was as much for practice as it was for Rhys to help his spymaster work off his frustration. At some point since I'd last looked, despite the sunny winter day, they'd removed their leather jackets and shirts. Their tan, muscled arms were both covered in the same manner of tattoos that adorned my own hand and forearm, the ink flowing across their shoulders and over their sculpted pectoral muscles. Between their wings, a line of them ran down the column of their spine, right beneath where they typically strapped their blades.
"We get the tattoos when we're initiated as Illyrian warriors, for luck and glory on the battlefield," Cassian said, following my stare. I doubted Cassian was drinking in the rest of the image, though. The stomach muscles gleaming with sweat in the bright sun, the bunching of their powerful thighs, the rippling strength in their backs surrounding those mighty, beautiful wings. Death on swift wings.
The title came out of nowhere, and for a moment I saw the painting I'd create. The darkness of those wings, faintly illuminated with lines of red and gold by the radiant winter sun, the glare off their blades, the harshness of the tattoos against the beauty of their faces. I blinked, and the image was gone, like a cloud of hot breath on a cold night.
Cassian jerked his chin toward his brothers. "Rhys is out of shape and won't admit it, but Azrael is too polite to beat him into the dirt." Rhys looked anything but out of shape. Cauldron boil me, what the hell did they eat to look like that?
My knees wobbled a bit as I strode to the stool where Cassian had brought a pitcher of water and two glasses. I poured one for myself, my pinky trembling uncontrollably again. My tattoo, I realized, had been made with Illyrian markings, perhaps Rhys's own way of wishing me luck and glory while facing Amarantha.
Luck and glory. I wouldn't mind a little of either of those things these days.
Cassian filled a glass for himself and clinked it against mine, so at odds from the brutal taskmaster who, moments ago, had me walking through punches, hitting his sparring pads, and trying not to crumple on the ground to beg for death. So at odds from the male who had gone head-to-head with my sister, unable to resist matching himself against Nesta's spirit of steel and flame.
"So," Cassian said, gulping down the water.
Behind us, Rhys and Azrael clashed, separated, and clashed again.
"When are you going to talk about how you wrote a letter to Tamlin telling him you've left for good?"
The question hit me so viciously that I sniped, "How about when you talk about how you tease and taunt Moore to hide whatever it is you feel for her?"
Because I had no doubt that he was well aware of the role he played in their little tangled web.
The beat of crunching steps and clashing blades behind us stumbled, then resumed. Cassian let out a startled, rough laugh.
"Old news."
"I have a feeling that's what she probably says about you."
Get back in the ring, Cassian said, setting down his empty glass. No core exercises, just fists. You want to mouth off? Then back it up.
But the question he'd asked swarmed in my skull. You've left for good. You've left for good. You've left for good. I had. I'd meant it. But without knowing what he thought, if he'd even cared that much... No, I knew he'd care. He'd probably trashed the manor in his rage. If my mere mention of him suffocating me had caused him to destroy his study, then this... I had been frightened by those fits of pure rage, cowed by them. And it had been love. I had loved him so deeply, so greatly, but... Rhys told you, I said. Cassian had the wisdom to look a bit nervous at the expression on my face.
He informed Azrael, who is monitoring things and needs to know, Az told me.
I assumed it was while you were out drinking and dancing. I drained the last of my water and walked back into the ring.
Hey, Cassian said, catching my arm.
His hazel eyes were more green than brown today.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to hit a nerve. Az only told me because I told him I needed to know for my own forces, to know what to expect. None of us... We don't think it's a joke. What you did was a hard call, a really damn hard call. It was just my shitty way of trying to see if you needed to talk about it. I'm sorry, he repeated, letting go.
The stumbling words, the earnestness in his eyes. I nodded as I resumed my place. All right. Though Rhysand kept at it with Azrael, I could have sworn his eyes were on me. Had been on me from the moment Cassian had asked me that question. Cassian shoved his hands into the sparring pads and held them up.
30 1-2 punches, then 40. Then 50.
I winced at him over his gloves as I wrapped my hands.
You didn't answer my question, he said with a tentative smile.
One I doubted his soldiers or Illyrian brethren ever saw. It had been love, and I'd meant it. The happiness, the lust, the peace. I'd felt all of those things. Once. I positioned my legs at 12 and 5 and lifted my hands up toward my face. But maybe those things had blinded me, too. Maybe they'd been a blanket over my eyes about the temper, the need for control, the need to protect that ran so deep he'd locked me up, like a prisoner. I'm fine, I said, stepping and jabbing with my left side. Fluid. Smooth like silk, as if my immortal body at last aligned. My fist slammed into Cassian's sparring pad, snatching back as fast as a snake's bite as I struck with my right, shoulder and foot twisting.
One, Cassian counted. Again I struck, 1-2. Two, and fine is good. Fine is great. Again, again. Again. We both knew fine was a lie.
I had done everything, everything for that love. I had ripped myself to shreds. I had killed innocence and debased myself. And he had sat beside Amarantha on that throne. And he couldn't do anything. Hadn't risked it. Hadn't risked being caught until there was one night left. And all he'd wanted to do wasn't free me, but fuck me. And again, again, again. 1-2, 1-2, 1-2. And when Amarantha had broken me, when she had snapped my bones and made my blood boil in its veins, he'd just knelt and begged her. He hadn't tried to kill her, hadn't crawled for me. Yes, he'd fought for me, but I'd fought harder for him. Again,
Again. Again. Each pound of my fists on the sparring pads, a question and an answer.
And he had the nerve, once his powers were back, to shove me into a cage. The nerve to say I was no longer useful. I was to be cloistered for his peace of mind. He'd given me everything I needed to become myself, to feel safe. And when he got what he wanted, when he got his power back, his lands back, he stopped trying. He was still good, still Tamlin, but he was just wrong. And then I was sobbing through my clenched teeth, the tears washing away that infected wound, and I didn't care that Cassian was there, or Rhys, or Azrael. The clashing steel stopped. And then my fists connected with bare skin, and I realized I'd punched through the sparring pads. No, burned through them, and I stopped too. The wrappings around my hands were now mere smudges of soot. Cassian's upraised palms remained before me, ready to take the blow if I needed to make it.
"I'm all right," he said quietly, gently.
And maybe I was exhausted and broken, but I breathed. I killed them. I hadn't said the words aloud since it had happened. Cassian's lips tightened.
"I know."
Not condemnation, not praise, but grim understanding. My hands slackened as another shuddering sob worked its way through me. It should have been me. And there it was. Standing there under the cloudless sky, the winter sun beating on my head, nothing around me save for rock, no shadows in which to hide, nothing to cling to. There it was. Then darkness swept in, soothing, gentle darkness. No shade, and a sweat-slick male body halted before me. Gentle fingers lifted my chin until I looked up at Rhysand's face. His wings had wrapped around us, cocooned us, the sunlight casting the membrane in gold and red. Beyond us, outside, in another world maybe, the sounds of steel on steel, Cassian and Azrael sparring, began.
"You will feel that way every day for the rest of your life," Rhysand said.
This close I could smell the sweat on him, the sea and citrus scent beneath it. His eyes were soft. I tried to look away, but he held my chin firm.
"And I know this, because I have felt that way every day since my mother and sister were slaughtered and I had to bury them myself, and even retribution didn't fix it."
He wiped away the tears on one cheek, then another.
"You can either let it wreck you, let it get you killed like it nearly did with the Weaver, or you can learn to live with it."
For a long moment, I just stared at the open, calm face. Maybe his true face, the one beneath all the masks he wore to keep his people safe.
"I'm sorry about your family," I rasped.
"I'm sorry I didn't find a way to spare you from what happened under the mountain," Rhys said with equal quiet. "From dying. From wanting to die."
I began to shake my head, but he said,
"I have two kinds of nightmares. The ones where I'm again Amarantha's whore, or my friends are, and the ones where I hear your neck snap and see the light leave your eyes."
I had no answer to that, to the tenor in his rich, deep voice. So I examined the tattoos on his chest and arms, the glow of his tan skin, so golden now that he was no longer caged inside that mountain. I stopped my perusal when I got to the V of muscles that flowed beneath the waist of his leather pants.
Instead, I flexed my hand in front of me, my skin warm from the heat that had burned through those pads.
"Ah," he said, wings sweeping back as he folded them gracefully behind him. "That."
I squinted at the flood of sunlight. "Autumn Court, right?" He took my hand, examining it, the skin already bruised from sparring.
"Right. A gift from its High Lord Baron."
Lucian's father. Lucian? I wonder what he made of all this. If he missed me.
If Ianthe continued to prey on him.
Still sparring, Cassian and Azrael were trying their best not to look like they were eavesdropping.
"I'm not well versed in the complexities of the other High Lord's elemental gifts," Rhys said. "But we can figure it out. Day by day, if need be."
"If you're the most powerful High Lord in history, does that mean the drop I got from you holds more sway over the others?"
Why I'd been able to break into his head that one time?
"Give it a try."
He jerked his chin toward me.
"See if you can summon darkness. I won't ask you to try to winnow," he added with a grin.
"I don't know how I did it to begin with."
"Will it into being."
I gave him a flat stare. He shrugged.
"Try thinking of me. How good-looking I am. How talented. How arrogant. That, too."
He crossed his arms over his bare chest, the movement making the muscles in his stomach flicker.
"Put a shirt on while you're at it," I quipped.
A feline smile.
"Does it make you uncomfortable?"
"I'm surprised there aren't more mirrors in this house, since you seem to love looking at yourself so much." Azrael launched into a coughing fit. Cassian just turned away, a hand clamped over his mouth.
Rhys's lips twitched. "There's the Feyre I adore."
I scowled, but closed my eyes and tried to look inward, toward any dark corner of myself I could find.
There were too many. Far too many.
And right now they each contained that letter I'd written yesterday. A goodbye. For my own sanity, my own safety.
"There are different kinds of darkness," Rhys said. I kept my eyes shut. "There is the darkness that frightens, the darkness that soothes, the darkness that is restful."
I pictured each.
"There is the darkness of lovers and the darkness of assassins. It becomes what the bearer wishes it to be, needs it to be. It is not wholly bad or good."
I only saw the darkness of that dungeon cell, the darkness of the bone carver's lair.
Cassian swore, but Azrael murmured a soft challenge that had their blades striking again.
"Open your eyes."
I did. And found darkness all around me. Not from me, but from Rhys. As if the sparring ring had been wiped away. As if the world had yet to begin. Quiet, soft, peaceful. Lights began twinkling, little stars, blooming irises of blue and purple and white. I reached out a hand toward one, and starlight danced on my fingertips. Far away, in another world perhaps, Azrael and Cassian sparred in the dark. No doubt using it as a training exercise. I shifted the star between my fingers like a coin on the hand of a magician. Here in the soothing, sparkling dark, a steady breath filled my lungs. I couldn't remember the last time I'd done such a thing, breathed easily. Then the darkness splintered and vanished, swifter than smoke on a wind.
I found myself blinking back the blinding sun, arms still out, Rhysand still before me.
Still without a shirt.
He said,
"We can work on it later.
For now."
He sniffed.
"Go take a bath."
I gave him a particularly vulgar gesture and asked Cassian to fly me home instead. Chapter 31.
"Don't dance so much on your toes,"
Cassian said to me 4 days later, as we spent the unusually warm afternoon in the sparring ring.
"Feet planted, daggers up, eyes on mine. If you were on a battlefield, you would have been dead with that maneuver."
Amryn snorted, from picking her nails while she lounged in a chaise. "She heard you the first 10 times you said it, Cassian."
"Keep talking, Amryn, and I'll drag you into the ring and see how much practice you've actually been doing."
Amryn just continued cleaning her nails. With a tiny bone, I realized. "Touch me, Cassian, and I'll remove your favorite part, small as it might be." He let out a low chuckle. Standing between them in the sparring ring, atop the House of Wind, a dagger in each hand, sweat sliding down my body, I wondered if I should find a way to slip out. Perhaps winnow. Though I hadn't been able to do it again since that morning in the mortal realm, despite my quiet efforts in the privacy of my own bedroom. 4 days of this. Training with him, working with Rhys afterward on trying to summon flame or darkness. Unsurprisingly, I made more progress with the former. Word had not yet arrived from the summer court, or from the spring court regarding my letter. I hadn't decided if that was a good thing. Azrael continued his attempt to infiltrate the human queen's courts, his network of spies now seeking a foothold to get inside. That he hadn't managed to do so yet made him quieter than usual. Colder. Amryn's silver eyes flicked up from her nails.
"Good. You can play with her."
"Play with who?"
said Moore, stepping from the stairwell shadows. Cassian's nostrils flared.
"Where'd you go the other night?"
he asked Moore without so much as a nod of greeting.
"I didn't see you leave Rita's."
Their usual dance hall for drinking and revelry. They'd dragged me out 2 nights ago, and I'd spent most of the time sitting in their booth, nursing my wine, talking over music with Azrael, who had arrived content to brood, but reluctantly joined me in observing Rhys holding court at the bar. Females and males watched Rhysand throughout the hall, and the Shadow Singer and I made a game of betting on who, exactly, would work up the nerve to invite the High Lord home. Unsurprisingly, Az won every round. But at least he was smiling by the end of the night. To Moore's delight when she'd stumbled back to our table to chug another drink before prancing onto the dance floor again. Rhys didn't accept any offers that came his way, no matter how beautiful they were, no matter how they smiled and laughed. And his refusals were polite, firm, but polite. Had he been with anyone since Amarantha? Did he want another person in his bed after Amarantha? Even the wine hadn't given me the nerve to ask Azrael about it. Moore, it seemed, went to Rita's more than anyone else. Practically lived there, actually. She'd shrugged at Cassian's demand, and another chaise like Amryn's appeared.
"I just went out," she said, plopping down.
"With whom?" Cassian pushed.
"Last I was aware," Moore said, leaning back in the chair. "I didn't take orders from you, Cassian, or report to you. So where I was and who I was with is none of your damn concern."
"You didn't tell Azrael, either."
I paused,
weighing those words. Cassian's stiff shoulders.
Yes, there was some tension between him and Moore that resulted in that bickering, but perhaps... Perhaps Cassian accepted the role of buffer not to keep them apart, but to keep the Shadow Singer from hurt.
From being old news, as I'd called him.
Cassian finally remembered I'd been standing in front of him, noted the look of understanding on my face, and gave me a warning one in return.
Fair enough. I shrugged and took a moment to set down the daggers and catch my breath. For a heartbeat, I wished Nesta were there, if only to see them go head to head. We hadn't heard from my sisters, or the mortal queens. I wondered when we'd send another letter or try another route.
Why, exactly? Cassian said to Amryn and Moore, not even bothering to try to sound pleasant. Are you two ladies here?
Moore closed her eyes as she tipped back her head, sunning her golden face with the same irreverence that Cassian perhaps sought to shield Azrael from, and Moore herself perhaps tried to shield Azrael from as well.
Rhys is coming in a few moments to give us some news, apparently. Didn't Amryn tell you?
I forgot, Amryn said, still picking at her nails. I was having too much fun watching Feyre evade Cassian's tried-and-true techniques to get people to do what he wants.
Cassian's brows rose. You've been here for an hour.
Oops, Amryn said.
Cassian threw up his hands. Get off your ass and give me 20 lunges.
A vicious, unearthly snarl cut him off. But Rhys strolled out of the stairwell, and I couldn't decide if I should be relieved or disappointed that Cassian versus Amryn was put to a sudden stop. He was in his fine clothes, not fighting leathers, his wings nowhere in sight. Rhys looked at them, at me, the daggers I'd left in the dirt, and then said, "Sorry to interrupt while things were getting interesting."
Fortunately for Cassian's balls, Amryn said, nestling back in her chaise. You arrived at the right time.
Cassian snarled half-heartedly at her.
Rhys laughed and said to none of us in particular, Ready to go on a summer holiday?
Moore said, The summer court invited you?
Of course they did. Feyre, Amryn, and I are going tomorrow.
Only the three of us?
Cassian seemed to have the same thought, his wings rustling as he crossed his arms and faced Rhys. The summer court is full of hothead fools and arrogant pricks, he warned. I should join you.
You'd fit right in, Amryn crooned. Too bad you still aren't going.
Cassian pointed a finger at her. Watch it, Amryn. She bared her teeth in a wicked smile.
Believe me, I'd prefer not to go either.
I clamped my lips shut to keep from smiling or grimacing, I didn't know. Rhys rubbed his temples.
Cassian, considering the fact that the last time you visited it didn't end well,
I wrecked one building, and Rhys cut him off.
Considering the fact that they are utterly terrified of sweet Amryn, she is the wiser choice.
I didn't know if there was anyone alive who wasn't utterly terrified of her.
It could easily be a trap, Cassian pushed. Who's to say the delay in replying wasn't because they're contacting our enemies to ambush you?
That is also why Amryn is coming, Rhys said simply.
Amryn was frowning, bored and annoyed.
Rhys said too casually,
There is also a great deal of treasure to be found in the summer court. If the book is hidden, Amryn, you might find other objects to your liking.
Shit, Cassian said, throwing up his hands again. Really, Rhys? It's bad enough we're stealing from them, but robbing them blind... Rhysand does have a point,
Amryn said. Their High Lord is young and untested. I doubt he's had much time to catalog his inherited hoard since he was appointed under the mountain. I doubt he'll know anything is missing. Very well, Rhysand. I'm in.
No better than a fire drake guarding its trove, indeed. Moore gave me a secret, subtle look that conveyed the same thing, and I swallowed a chuckle. Cassian started to object again, but Rhys said quietly,
I will need you, not Amryn, in the human realm. The Summer Court has banned you for eternity, and though your presence would be a good distraction while Feyre does what she has to, it could lead to more trouble than it's worth. I stiffened. What I had to do, meaning track down that Book of Breathings and steal it. Feyre Cursebreaker and Thief.
Just cool your heels, Cassian, Amryn said, eyes a bit glazed, as she no doubt imagined the treasure she might steal from the Summer Court. We'll be fine without your swaggering and growling at everyone. Their High Lord owes Rhys a favor for saving his life under the mountain, and keeping his secrets. Cassian's wings twitched, but Moore chimed in.
And the High Lord also probably wants to figure out where we stand in regard to any upcoming conflict.
Cassian's wings settled again. He jerked his chin at me.
Feyre, though. It's one thing to have her here, even when everyone knows it. It's another to bring her to a different court and introduce her as a member of our own. The message it'd send to Tamlin, if my letter wasn't enough. But Rhys was done. He inclined his head to Amryn and strolled for the open archway. Cassian lurched a step, but Moore lifted a hand.
Leave it,
she murmured. Cassian glared, but obeyed. I took that as a chance to follow after Rhys, the warm darkness inside the House of Wind blinding me. My fey eyes adjusted swiftly, but for the first few steps down the narrow hallway, I trailed after Rhys on memory alone.
Any more traps I should know about before we go tomorrow?
I said to his back. Rhys looked over his shoulder, pausing atop the stair landing.
Here I was, thinking your notes the other night indicated you'd forgiven me.
I took in that half-grin. The chest I might have suggested I'd lick and had avoided looking at for the past 4 days, and halted a healthy distance away.
One would think a High Lord would have more important things to do than pass notes back and forth at night.
I do have more important things to do, he purred, but I find myself unable to resist the temptation. The same way you can't resist watching me whenever we're out. So territorial.
My mouth went a bit dry. But flirting with him, fighting with him, it was easy, fun. Maybe I deserved both of those things. So I closed the distance between us, smoothly stepped past him and said, You haven't been able to keep away from me since Cullen Mai, it seems. Something rippled in his eyes that I couldn't place, but he flicked my nose, hard enough that I hissed and batted his hand away.
I can't wait to see what that sharp tongue of yours can do at the Summer Court, he said, gaze fixed on my mouth, and vanished into shadow.
Chapter 32 In the end, only Amryn and I joined Rhys, Cassian having failed to sway his High Lord, Azrael still off overseeing his network of spies and investigating the human realm, and Moore tasked with guarding Valaris. Rhys would winnow us directly into Adriata, the castle city of the Summer Court, and there we would stay, for however long it took for me to detect and then steal the first half of the book.
As Reese's newest pet, I would be granted tours of the city and the High Lord's personal residence. If we were lucky, none of them would realize that Reese's lapdog was actually a bloodhound. And it was a very, very good disguise. Reese and Amryn stood in the townhouse foyer the next day, the rich morning sunlight streaming through the windows and pooling on the ornate carpet. Amryn wore her usual shades of gray, her loose pants cut to just beneath her navel, the billowing top cropped to show the barest slice of skin along her midriff, alluring as a calm sea under a cloudy sky. Reese was head-to-toe black, accented with silver thread. No wings. The cool, cultured male I'd first met. His favorite mask. For my own, I'd selected a flowing lilac dress, its skirts floating on a phantom wind beneath the silver and pearl-crusted belt at my waist. Matching night-blooming silver flowers had been embroidered to climb from the hem to brush my thighs, and a few more twined down the folds at my shoulders. The perfect gown to combat the warmth of the summer court. It swished and sighed as I descended the last two stairs into the foyer. Reese surveyed me with a long, unreadable sweep from my silver-slippered feet to my half-up hair. Noala had curled the strands that had been left down, soft, supple curls that brought out the gold in my hair. Reese simply said,
"Good, let's go."
My mouth popped open, but Amryn explained with a broad, feline smile, "He's pissy this morning." "Why?" I asked, watching Amryn take Reese's hand, her delicate fingers dwarfed by his. He held out the other to me.
"Because," Reese answered for her, "I stayed out late with Cassian and Azrael, and they took me for all I was worth in cards."
"Sore loser?" I gripped his hand. His calluses scraped against my own, the only reminder of the trained warrior beneath the clothes and veneer.
"I am when my brothers tag-team me," he grumbled.
He offered no warning before we vanished on a midnight wind, and then I was squinting at the glaring sun off a turquoise sea, just as I was trying to reorder my body around the dry, suffocating heat, even with the cooling breeze off the water. I blinked a few times, and that was as much reaction as I let myself show as I yanked my hand from Reese's grip. We seemed to be standing on a landing platform at the base of a tan stone palace, the building itself perched atop a mountain island in the heart of a half-moon bay. The city spread around and below us, toward that sparkling sea, the buildings all from that stone, or glimmering white material that might have been coral or pearl. Gulls flapped over the many turrets and spires, no clouds above them, nothing on the breeze with them but salty air and the clatter of the city below. Various bridges connected the bustling island to the larger landmass that circled it on three sides, one of them currently raising itself so a many-masted ship could cruise through. Indeed, there were more ships than I could count. Some merchant vessels, some fishing ones, and some, it seemed, ferrying people from the island city to the mainland, whose sloping shores were crammed full of more buildings, more people. More people, like the half-dozen before us, framed by a pair of sea-glass doors that opened into the palace itself. On our little balcony, there was no option to escape. No path out but winnowing away. Or going through those doors. Or, I supposed, the plunge awaiting us to the red roofs of the fine houses 100 feet below.
"Welcome to Adriata," said the tall male in the center of the group.
And I knew him. Remembered him. Not from memory. I'd already remembered that the handsome Lord of High Summer had rich, brown skin,
white hair and eyes of crushing turquoise blue. I'd already remembered he'd been forced to watch as his courtier's mind was invaded and then his life snuffed out by Rhysand. As Rhysand lied to Amarantha about what he'd learned and spared the male from a fate perhaps worse than death.
No, I now remembered the High Lord of Summer in a way I couldn't quite explain. Like some fragment of me knew it had come from him. From here. Like some piece of me said, I remember, I remember, I remember. We're one and the same, you and I.
Rhys merely drawled, Good to see you again, Tarquin. The five other people behind the High Lord of Summer swapped frowns of varying severity. Like their lord, their skin was dark, their hair in shades of white or silver, as if they had lived under the bright sun their entire lives. Their eyes, however, were of every color, and they now shifted between me and Amren. Rhys slid one hand into a pocket and gestured with the other to Amren.
Amren, I think you know, though you haven't met her since your... promotion.
Cool, calculating grace, edged with steel.
Tarquin gave Amren the briefest of nods.
Welcome back to the city, lady.
Amren didn't nod, or bow, or so much as curtsy. She looked over Tarquin, tall and muscled, his clothes of sea green and blue and gold, and said,
At least you're far more handsome than your cousin. He was an eyesore.
A female behind Tarquin outright glared. Amren's red lips stretched wide.
Condolences, of course, she added with as much sincerity as a snake.
Wicked. Cruel. That's what Amren and Rhys were. What I was to be to these people.
Rhys gestured to me.
I don't believe you two were ever formally introduced under the mountain. Tarquin, Feyre. Feyre, Tarquin.
No titles here. Either to unnerve them or because Rhys found them a waste of breath.
Tarquin's eyes, such stunning crystal blue, fixed on me. I remember you, I remember you, I remember you.
The High Lord did not smile. I kept my face neutral, vaguely bored. His gaze drifted to my chest, the bare skin revealed by the sweeping V of my gown, as if he could see where that spark of life, his power, had gone. Rhys followed that gaze.
Her breasts are rather spectacular, aren't they? Delicious as ripe apples.
I fought the urge to scowl, and instead slid my attention to him, as indolently as he'd looked at me, at the others. Here I was, thinking you had a fascination with my mouth. Delighted surprise lit Rhys's eyes, there and gone in a heartbeat. We both looked back to our hosts, still stone-faced and stiff-backed. Tarquin seemed to weigh the air between my companions and me, then said carefully,
You have a tale to tell, it seems. We have many tales to tell, Rhys said, jerking his chin toward the glass doors behind them. So why not get comfortable?
The female, a half-step behind Tarquin, inched closer.
We have refreshments prepared.
Tarquin seemed to remember her and put a hand on her slim shoulder.
Cressida, Princess of Adriata.
The ruler of his capital? Or wife? There was no ring on either of their fingers, and I didn't recognize her from under the mountain. Her long silver hair blew across her pretty face in the briny breeze, and I didn't mistake the light in her brown eyes for anything but razor-sharp cunning.
A pleasure, she murmured huskily to me.
And an honor?
My breakfast turned to lead in my gut, but I didn't let her see what the groveling did to me. Let her realize it was ammunition. Instead, I gave her my best imitation of Rhysand's shrug.
The honor's mine, Princess.
The others were hastily introduced. Three advisors who oversaw the city, the court, and the trade. And then a broad-shouldered, handsome male named Varian, Cressida's younger brother, captain of Tarquin's guard, and prince of Adriata. His attention was fixed wholly on Amran, as if he knew where the biggest threat lay, and would be happy to kill her if given the chance. In the brief time I'd known her, Amran had never looked more delighted. We were led into a palace crafted of shell-flecked walkways and walls, countless windows looking out to the bay and mainland or the open sea beyond. Sea-glass chandeliers swayed on the warm breeze over gurgling streams and fountains of fresh water. High fae, servants and courtiers hurried across and around them, most brown-skinned and clad in loose, light clothing, all far too preoccupied with their own matters to take note or interest in our presence. No lesser fairies crossed our path. Not one. I kept a step behind Rhysand as he walked at Tarquin's side, that mighty power of his leashed and dimmed, the others flowing behind us. Amran remained within reach, and I wondered if she was also to be my bodyguard. Tarquin and Rhys had been talking lightly, both already sounding bored, of the approaching Ninsar, of the native flowers that both courts would display for the minor brief holiday. Callan Mai wouldn't be too long after that. My stomach twisted. If Tamlin was intent on upholding tradition, if I was no longer with him... I didn't let myself get that far down the road. It wouldn't be fair. To me. To him.
"We have four main cities in my territory,"
Tarquin said to me, looking over his muscled shoulder.
"We spend the last month of winter and first spring months in Adriata. It's finest at this time of year."
Indeed. I supposed with that endless summer, there was no limit to how one might enjoy one's time. In the country, by the sea, in a city under the stars. I nodded. "It's very beautiful." Tarquin stared at me long enough that Rhys said,
"The repairs have been going well, I take it?"
That hauled Tarquin's attention back.
"Mostly. There remains much to be done. The back half of the castle is a wreck, but as you can see, we've finished most of the inside. We focused on the city first, and those repairs are ongoing."
Amarantha had sacked the city? Rhys said,
"I hope no valuables were lost during its occupation." "Not the most important things, thank the mother," Tarquin said.
Behind me, Cressida tensed. The three advisors peeled off to attend to other duties, murmuring farewell, with wary looks in Tarquin's direction. As if this might very well be the first time he'd needed to play host, and they were watching their High Lord's every move. He gave them a smile that didn't reach his eyes, and said nothing more as he led us into a vaulted room of white oak and green glass, overlooking the mouth of the bay and the sea that stretched on forever. I had never seen water so vibrant. Green and cobalt and midnight, and for a heartbeat, a palette of paint flashed in my mind, along with the blue and yellow and white and black I might need to paint it.
"This is my favorite view," Tarquin said beside me,
and I realized I'd gone to the wide windows while the others had seated themselves around the mother-of-pearl table. A handful of servants were heaping fruits, leafy greens, and steamed shellfish onto their plates. "You must be very proud," I said, "to have such stunning lands." Tarquin's eyes... so like the sea beyond us, slid to me.
How do they compare to the ones you have seen?
Such a carefully crafted question. I said dully,
Everything in Prithian is lovely when compared to the mortal realm.
And is being immortal lovelier than being human?
I could feel everyone's attention on us, even as Rhys engaged Cresseida and Varian in bland-edged discussion about the status of their fish markets. So I looked the High Lord of Summer up and down, as he had examined me, brazenly and without a shred of politeness, and then said,
You tell me.
Tarquin's eyes crinkled.
You are a pearl. Though I knew that on the day you threw that bone at Amarantha and splattered mud on her favorite dress.
I shut out the memories, the blind terror of that first trial.
What did he make of that tug between us? Did he realize it was his own power, or think it was a bond of his own, some sort of strange allure? And if I had to steal from him, perhaps that meant getting closer.
I do not remember you being quite so handsome under the mountain. The sunlight and sea suit you.
A lesser male might have preened, but Tarquin knew better, knew that I had been with Tamlin and was now with Rhys, and had now been brought here. Perhaps he thought me no better than Ianthe.
How exactly do you fit within Rhysand's court?
A direct question, after such roundabout ones, to no doubt get me on uneven footing. It almost worked. I nearly admitted,
I don't know.
But Rhys said from the table, as if he'd heard every word,
Feyre is a member of my inner circle, and is my emissary to the mortal lands.
Cresseida, seated beside him, said,
Do you have much contact with the mortal realm?
I took that as an invitation to sit and get away from the too heavy stare of Tarquin. A seat had been left open for me at Amran's side, across from Rhys. The High Lord of the Night Court sniffed at his wine, white, sparkling, and I wondered if he was trying to piss them off by implying they'd poisoned it, as he said,
I prefer to be prepared for every potential situation. And given that Hybern seems set on making themselves a nuisance, striking up a conversation with the humans might be in our best interest.
Varian drew his focus away from Amran long enough to say roughly,
So it's been confirmed, then? Hybern is readying for war.
They're done readying,
Rhys drawled, at last sipping from his wine. Amran didn't touch her plate, though she pushed things around as she always did. I wondered what, who she'd eat while here. Varian seemed like a good guess.
War is imminent.
Yes, you mentioned that in your letter, Tarquin said,
claiming the seat at the head of the table between Rhys and Amran. A bold move, to situate himself between two such powerful beings. Arrogance? Or an attempt at friendship. Tarquin's gaze again drifted to me before focusing on Rhys.
And you know that against Highburn we will fight. We lost enough good people under the mountain, I have no interest in being slaves again. But if you are here to ask me to fight in another war, Rhysand...
That's not a possibility,
Rhys smoothly cut in,
and had not even entered my mind.
My glimmer of confusion must have shone, because Cresseida crooned to me,
High lords have gone to war for less, you know. Doing it over such an unusual female would be nothing unexpected.
Which was likely why they had accepted this invitation, favor or no, to feel us out. If Tamlin went to war to get me back, no. No, that wouldn't be an option. I'd written to him, told him to stay away. And he wasn't foolish enough to start a war he couldn't win. Not when he wouldn't be fighting other High Fae but Illyrian warriors, led by Cassian of Azrael. It would be slaughter.
So I said, bored and flat and dull, "Try not to look too excited, Princess. The High Lord of Spring has no plans to go to war with the Night Court."
"And are you in contact with Tamlin, then?"
A saccharine smile. My next words were quiet, slow, and I decided I did not mind stealing from them, not one bit. There are things that are public knowledge and things that are not. My relationship with him is well known. Its current standing, however, is none of your concern, or anyone else's. But I do know Tamlin, and I know that there will be no internal war between courts. At least, not over me or my decisions.
"What a relief, then," Cressida said,
sipping from her white wine before cracking a large crab claw, pink and white and orange.
"To know we're not harboring a stolen bride, that we need not bother returning her to her master as the law demands, and as any wise person might do, to keep trouble from their doorstep."
Amryn had gone utterly still. "I left of my own free will," I said, "and no one is my master." Cressida shrugged.
"Think that all you want, lady, but the law is the law. You were his bride. Swearing fealty to another High Lord does not change that. So it is a very good thing that he respects your decisions. Otherwise, all it would take would be one letter from him to Tarquin, requesting your return, and we would have to obey. Or risk war ourselves."
Rhysand sighed.
"You are always a joy, Cressida."
Varian said,
"Careful, High Lord, my sister speaks the truth."
Tarquin laid a hand on the pale table.
"Rhysand is our guest. His courtiers are our guests. And we will treat them as such. We will treat them, Cressida, as we treat people who saved our necks, when all it would have taken was one word from them for us to be very, very dead."
Tarquin studied me and Rhysand, whose face was gloriously disinterested. The High Lord of Summer shook his head and said to Rhys,
"We have more to discuss later, you and I. Tonight, I'm throwing a party for you all on my pleasure barge in the bay. After that, you're free to roam in this city wherever you wish. You will forgive its princess if she is protective of her people. Rebuilding these months has been long and hard. We do not wish to do it again anytime soon."
Cressida's eyes grew dark, haunted.
"Cressida made many sacrifices on behalf of her people," Tarquin offered gently, to me. "Do not take her caution personally." "We all made sacrifices," Rhysand said,
the icy boredom now shifting into something razor sharp.
"And you now sit at this table with your family because of the ones Feyre made. So you will forgive me, Tarquin, if I tell your princess that if she sends word to Tamlin, or if any of your people try to bring her to him, their lives will be forfeit."
Even the sea breeze died.
"Do not threaten me in my own home, Rhysand," Tarquin said. "My gratitude goes only so far."
"It's not a threat," Rhys countered, the crab claws on his plate cracking open beneath invisible hands.
"It's a promise."
They all looked at me, waiting for any response. So I lifted my glass of wine, looked them each in the eye, holding Tarquin's gaze the longest, and said, "No wonder immortality never gets dull." Tarquin chuckled, and I wondered if his loosed breath was one of profound relief. And through that bond between us, I felt Rhysand's flicker of approval. Chapter 33. We were given a suite of connecting rooms, all centered on a large, lavish lounge that was open to the sea and city below. My bedroom was appointed in sea foam and softest blue with pops of gold, like the gilded clamshell atop my pale wood dresser. I had just set it down when the white door behind me clicked open and Rhys slid